Thank you, Your Honor.
Morning.
Morning. The issue in this case is whether a jury instruction that requires a plaintiff to show that discrimination was the sole reason for his non-selection is consistent with the statute that provides that all personnel actions must be made free from any discrimination.
Even if it isn't, doesn't the next sentence in the instruction solve the problem? That is, which means this sentence is about to tell you what the first sentence means. That is, he must prove that but for his race, and but for his national origin, and but for his sex, he would have been hired.
I think not, Your Honor, and simply because when you put soul in front of but for, then it certainly seems to be solely but for. And solely but for is just as bad and just as inconsistent with the statute.
Now the that is sentence replaces the soul sentence.
If that were the case, then perhaps...
You're saying but for by itself would be error?
But for by itself in an E-16 case would be error, Your Honor, yes. And I believe that solely but for...
Wait a minute, stop. Wait, but for is error. Aren't you out of bounds with our own authority?
I think not, Your Honor. I'm not aware of any authority of this court that says that solely but
for... No. Forget solely. Just say but for.
I'm not aware of any authority, any jury instruction case in this court that says you must have a but for. The jury instruction cases that I'm aware of in this circuit are motivating factor. And those cases are Porter and Fogg.
But you have to ask for it, don't you?
Well, we certainly did.
You
we did? Certainly asked for
you
a motivating.
You asked for a mixed motive instruction?
We certainly asked for a motivating factor instruction, Your Honor. I believe on our
request.
Did you
try this case, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't you say to the court when she proposed this that this would be okay?
This instruction?
Yeah.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. We vehemently objected to this. Our proposed instruction is on page 61 of the appendix, which is Judge Fasciola's model instruction, which had the language, for example, he must show that race, national origins of himself or the person who was selected was a motivating factor in the decision not to select the plaintiff. Remember that the plaintiff must show only that race and or national origin was a motivating factor. He does not have to show that it was the only or even a major factor in the defendant's decision. That was our proposed jury instruction, Your Honor. So absolutely not. We did not ask for this. We did object to it.
But don't we understand that there are two tracks that a plaintiff under our law has available to the plaintiff, and the plaintiff has to choose one track or the other?
Certainly that is what Ginger says in the context of summary judgment. In Porter, which is, I think, the first case where that arose, the question was the plaintiff had chosen motivating factor. And this court said, well, since you chose motivating factor, you can't complain that there's a same action defense. We're not complaining. We're not attempting to preclude the defendant from seeking to prove a same action defense. What we're saying is the statutory standard, frankly, under A2 or E16, is motivating factor. And the judge told the jury that that was not the case. The judge told the jury that we had to show that it was the sole reason for his non-selection, and that's error.
Could you just tell us where, when the judge decided to give this instruction, and she added the that is sentence, where did you object to that instruction?
The actual, this is in the pretrial and... let me see if I can just find my note very quickly. The judge, we did object and we discussed that, and I believe it was 158, just a moment. No, it's before that. I'm sorry, Your Honor. On 117, I believe it is.
And what is there?
This is where the judge is telling us that she intends to issue this instruction that she's gleaned from Ginger.
Right.
And she tells us, among other things, she says that this is a direct discrimination claim, and in such cases, the plaintiff does not have to show motive of the employer, she says. Motive is not part of the burden. There's no need to show motive. We object to this, as I may address this, and what I say to her is, isn't it possible, can't we just have the language of the statute? And the judge says, no, we're going to go with what I've gleaned from Ginger, because, Your Honor, Ginger is not, it is not a jury instruction case. And this court has never once held
But she added that is sentence.
She did.
And then you said, she said, so I'm going to stick in, let me stick with the but for. And you said, there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. We said, go with the statutory language.
So she did that. But did you also say, we object to this because there's no mixed motive instruction?
No, we did not say anything about mixed motive. What we said, motivating factor. No, is that a distinction? Because we didn't say when she proposed
the
but for, that, Your Honor.
Where did you say that wasn't sufficient?
What we asked the court to do was simply fashion instruction that followed the language of the statute, and she did not do that. And this was...
I don't think you're answering Judge Tatel's question.
Perhaps I misunderstood the question, Your Honor.
I think... Would you like to repeat your question, Judge Tatel?
Yeah, my question is, she provided an instruction with the but-for language.
Correct.
You said that was fine.
Absolutely not. We did not consent to that instruction, Your Honor. We objected to that instruction.
Well, where did you say, Your Honor, the but-for instruction is too restrictive? We need an instruction a motivating factor instruction.
Well, we said that all along, Your Honor. But what we said was, again, and this, I believe, and I apologize for not being able to put my finger right on it, though I know it is in our joint appendix, and I believe that it's on page 119.
We took the record as you're indicating but-for was perfectly acceptable.
I don't know.
You said that's fine, Your Honor, didn't you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It certainly wasn't the whole crux of our argument.
Isn't it not in the record?
I don't know where it says that. I don't know where it says that.
Mr. Cater.
Yes, Your Honor.
Quote, there is nothing wrong with that. That's what you said.
Well, there's nothing wrong with but-for when it's in the context of motivating factor. But there's certainly something wrong with but-for when it's right before, right after solely. And that's what we said, Your Honor. We did not consent to this instruction.
Judge Silverman and I are just asking you where you said that. That's all. If you did, show it to us.
I was wondering, I couldn't find it. Thank you. I was looking at the wrong day. I think, first of all, I said the D.C. Circuit does not require this instruction be given. Statute says because of.
Right, and she gave you that.
She did not give because of. She gave.
Excuse me, that's what it says.
It says solely the reason.
The next sentence, that is.
Yes, but Your Honor, my point is, if you stick solely in front of it, and this
now
court,
we're back to the other argument. What I'm trying to find out is where did you say that even the because of language was inadequate because it didn't permit the jury to find discrimination if it was a motivating factor. That's what I'm asking.
Your Honor, the discussion about the jury instruction, our objections to it in open court are produced on pages 126 and thereafter at the appendix. It certainly was our position that we objected to this. We objected to it when
So you say we'll find it on 126.
I believe, Your Honor, in the discourse between the judge starting on page 126 through when we started with the opening argument, which starts on page 128, 8, I believe, is the context in which we made this argument. And the argument was, Your Honor, that this instruction is wrong. The law of this circuit has been, always has been, the law of the Supreme Court, solely but for, is not the standard under the law, and is certainly not the standard under E16.
Can we just focus on the exact words? You have them in front of you?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So on 125, you say at the bottom, I think that the problem here is you're caught between the D.C. Circuit and the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, on the one hand, says but for, and the D.C. Circuit has come up with this sole cause language. So you're saying but for is correct. On bottom of, on page 126, you said the district judge says, the Supreme Court has recently told us that because of means but for, so I'm going to stick it in. Let me stick with but for. Mr. Cater, there's nothing wrong with that, certainly, Your Honor, but again, just because if we don't know, we can't go with the statutory definition. Congress has said because of. Now, is there any place where you say you want motivating factor in this section?
No, she's already told us she's not giving us motivating factor.
Where here did you object to not having motivating factor?
That was the entire context of the argument. We submitted the motivating factor instruction.
Other than what you submitted, is there anything in the actual colloquy with the judge where you used the words motivating factor?
I don't recall specifically, Your Honor. I don't have the entire, this is just an excerpt of that transcript.
Well, that's what you gave us.
It is what we gave you. I said the word motivating factor, I don't know.
When you sit down, I would study this matter, and on rebuttal, if you can come up and show us where you used in our oral argument with the judge the words motivating factor, that would be very helpful.
Very well. If I may reserve any time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Michelle Lowe with the United States Attorney's Office. I represent the Library of Congress. From the inception of this case, Ponce argued that the library did not select him for the director position because of his race, national origin, and/or sex. At every stage of this litigation, he challenged the library's reasons that it believed the highest-ranked candidate to be the best qualified for the position as pretext for discrimination, telling the jury that this simply cannot be true. He continues to argue on appeal that General Scott's asserted reasons, justification-based reasons for the selection, were not his real reasons. The district court correctly determined that Ponce had brought a single motive case, and in accord with Ginger, Fogg, and Supreme Court precedent, instructed the jury that Ponce had to show that unlawful discrimination was the sole reason for his non-selection.
You think our cases referring to sole reason are dubious?
I think the cases that refer to sole reason, Fogg particularly and Ginger, have used it interchangeably with but for.
But there's a difference in meaning, isn't there?
Well, they're taken out of context.
There is a difference in meaning in those two phrases.
There is a difference in meaning.
Those two phrases, but for may be accurate. Sole sounds dubious to me.
Well, sole, I believe the courts have interpreted that not in the sense that the plaintiff has argued, that the appellant has argued, but as interchangeable, the functional equivalent of but for.
You think we're right about that?
I mean,
we're bound by prior opinion, but do you think we're right about that?
I think it is right to the extent that sole is used as a functional equivalent of but for.
That's like saying black is fine if it's used as a functional equivalent of white.
Well, not entirely, Your Honor. I don't believe that's the case, because sole reason has been interpreted has been used as an equivalent for but for.
Do we have a case that says that?
I'm sorry?
Do we have a case that says that?
Well, in Fogg, the Fogg court is talking about the motivating, in a mixed motive construct, what you do not have to show, and you don't have to show as in a single motive context that the unlawful discrimination was a sole or but-for reason for the discrimination.
Well, that or could be either an inclusive or an exclusive or, couldn't it? That it could be sole, that's one possibility, or but-for, which is another possibility. That is, but-for is less restrictive than sole.
Well, to the extent that out of context it may be...
I'm not talking about out of context. Okay. That's in context. It's a phrase.
I don't read the opinions. I don't think the opinions have intended it to be an either-or proposition, that when we talk about
sole... Why don't you read it that way?
Because of the cases, the way that they've set up the but-for test, it's generally been regarded as but-for is the showing that you need to make. And so sole, I think, has developed a sort of a shorthand for but-for in these cases.
I have a couple of other questions for you, if I may. The first of which, when we talk about pretext, the pretext we're talking about the reason. Are we talking about the ultimate reason or a subordinate reason? For instance, suppose one were to conclude that General Scott gilded the lily, to say the least, concerning the views of the supervisor at the Commerce Department, and he described her as having endorsed fully the qualifications of the plaintiff in this case. No, excuse me, about the one who was chosen over the plaintiff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the record, that doesn't seem right. Is that the pretext one looks at, or is the pretext the statement that Hayes is the most qualified applicant? Do you understand what I'm getting at? Can there be a pretext, a subordinate pretext issue?
I think I understand. So
We conclude that General Scott wasn't telling the truth about the recommendation of Hayes' supervisor of the Department of Commerce.
Right.
Is that sufficient to make a pretext, if that were to be determined?
I think that can be part of the pretext case if the ultimate fact finder believes that his asserted real reason was not the real reason, and takes that to be...
Well, he could be telling the truth that he thought, the record establishes that she was the best qualified, at least as it appeared to him, and yet he could be not telling the truth about the views of the Department of Commerce supervisor. Do you see the point?
Well, I think...
Is the pretext the overall question of whether Hayes was best qualified, or is the pretext... Could the pretext be established based on the exaggeration of the Commerce Department supervisor's views?
I think the pretext question is the ultimate question of whether Hayes was the best qualified.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Now, another question I have. Why does the plaintiff in this kind of case have to choose between two alternative theories? Why can't the plaintiff plead and argue all in the alternative? Either that my client was discriminated against because, by reason of the protected class, she was passed over on the but-for thing. But if you don't find that, it's still a motivating factor, and therefore we're entitled to a subordinate relief. Why can't somebody do that?
I think a plaintiff may be able to do that.
What do you mean maybe? Or no? Can a plaintiff do that? Can a plaintiff plead alternatively, argue alternatively, get jury instructions alternatively?
If a plaintiff has a good faith basis, yes, for pleading either theory, yes.
Well, it's a question of gradation. I claim as a plaintiff that the but-for standard was established here, but if I fail to show that, at least it's a motivating factor. Why can't you make that alternative claim?
I think in a different sort of case, you can make that claim.
Why couldn't he have done it in this case?
Well, he could have if...
I'm just trying to understand what it seems to me our cases seem to describe this as you have to take one path or the other, and I don't understand why.
I don't think the cases offer a bilateral, an exclusively bilateral approach, bipolar approach, binary approach, where you have to choose one or the other. I think the cases say there are two alternatives for establishing a unlawful employment action.
Now, I can understand why a plaintiff in a particular case would not want to do that,
sure,
for fear that it's more likely than not he or she would lose on the first issue and win only with the minor remedy on the second.
Sure.
I can see, but you ought to be able to have that choice, right? So you'd ought to be able to go plead in the alternative and go to the jury on the alternative.
You can. I think that is correct. You can. In this case, the plaintiff.
I should understand. I'm just trying to understand,
sure,
the basic law here,
sure,
as long as I've got you.
Your point is, in this case, they didn't choose, at least the way you read the record, right? They didn't choose the alternative.
No, I think the record bears that out. I mean, he told the court during the colloquy at JA 126 that but for was correct. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. He says in his...
Well, Mr. Cater's view is that his position is, we argued throughout this that we were also entitled to a motivating factor instruction. In fact, we submitted an instruction that did that.
He submitted a motivating factor instruction that cites to the part of the statute that this 2000E-2A that this court has always read to be setting up a but-for test. And he doesn't say that he brought a mixed motive case anywhere during the trial, anywhere in his complaint, or on appeal.
He
still
argues. He doesn't
have
to do it in his complaint, does he? That's Judge Silberman's question. You're not saying you've got to plead it, do you?
He doesn't have to plead it in his,
okay,
complaint. I'm merely pointing out that the argument has been consistent,
yeah,
from the complaint to all the way to the jury trial. The plaintiff has consistently argued that this was a single motive case.
Okay, I just have one more question. So the government's theory is that if this instruction had not included the that is sentence, it still would have been okay?
Well, I think the...
Is that your position?
I think the but for certainly...
No, my question is,
yes,
the instruction doesn't have that. It only has the sole reason sentence. Is it your position that that would have been okay?
Well, I think under Ginger...
But Ginger's,
yes,
not an instruction case, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay. So do we have a case that has approved an instruction like this? A sole reason instruction?
I think in this case, yes, because the other components of the jury instruction on intentional discrimination point out that he has to prove because of...
Oh, but my question is, suppose that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a case anywhere that has, this circuit, have we held that a sole reason instruction by itself is appropriate?
I'm not aware of one,
okay,
Your Honor.
But the government's position is it would be?
I think in...
Without the explanatory language in the that is sentence?
I think in this case, it would have been, but there may be cases where that would not be appropriate, mm-hmm, depending on the facts of the other cases. And
How can it ever be appropriate to give a jury instruction requiring the jury to determine that discrimination was the sole reason?
Well, Your Honor, I think if that was the only instruction, then that would probably be problematic.
So you, just to be clear, then you agree that but for does not mean sole.
Because
I understood your briefs to say the opposite.
No, I believe in this context and the way the court explained it, but for does mean sole.
We're talking about the law now,
yes,
not about this particular case. Do you think the portion of the private Title VII section which says because of, you think that means sole? Or does that mean... That definitely means but for.
Yes.
Now, does but for mean sole?
Standing alone, but for is narrower than sole. So
narrower,
I mean,
you mean broader.
Broader, pardon me.
Yeah.
Broader than sole. And so I think standing alone, does but for equal sole? I would have to say no.
Okay, and that's actually what the Supreme Court said, both in Price Waterhouse and in McDonald versus Santa Fe, right?
Right, but I think in again, in this case...
I don't know why you made the argument then.
Well, I
mean... Why did you make the argument that Sol would, even if but-for meant Sol, it was okay? When you've just agreed, I think reasonably, that is not so. So why make an argument in the brief that is just flatly wrong, you know is wrong?
I made the argument in the brief because I think in the context of the jury instructions,
that's not what you said.
It was correct.
That's not what you said.
Oh, I apologize if that was not clear.
Hey, well, look, better late than never, right? You've got it right now.
If the court has no further questions, we'd ask.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Cater have any more time? Okay, we took up a lot of your time. You can have 2 more minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah. Judge Garland, to answer your question, I believe that we did adequately preserve the error, and I would just draw your attention to page 127, line 7 of the appendix, which is at the end of the colloquy with the judge about her instruction. I say, very well, I understand. I appreciate that, Your Honor. Of course, our objection would stand. She says, yes. Our objection was, we want the motivating factor instruction. She didn't give it to us.
Well, where is that? What I'm not clear at all is that that's what you're asking for there. The word motivating factor isn't anywhere in that colloquy.
It's not. It was in our proposed instruction, which she refused to provide to us. And that was all done on the paper. She actually sent us an email with that very last instruction and said, we'll talk about it. And that was the objection that we made. We wanted our instruction. And we objected the instruction that she gave, and we said our objection would stand. She says, yes. So I do believe, Your Honor, that we adequately preserved our error. We were absolutely not happy with her instruction, and she knew that. There was no question.
You heard Ms. Lowe say that the defect in your proposed instruction was that it cited the provision of the statute that was but for. Is that true?
We said because of, but for are perhaps synonymous.
Well, those are, but that's different from
motivating factor.
Yeah. Right.
What?
Because
it's because you cited the subsection A, which is the because of section,
yeah, correct.
Not subsection
and
A.
Because of, we know from Porter, we know from Price Waterhouse, we know that because of doesn't mean solely because of. And if it's not solely because of, then what is it? Then it's motivating factor.
And
it's
what is the purpose of section M?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that this court has said that these are two separate statutory standards. I believe the Supreme Court has said differently in Staub. What the Supreme Court said in Staub in describing
just
title...
Just to be clear then, so that you agree that our law describes these as different standards?
Correct. It does. It says that they're different. Now, in Porter, where this dichotomy first arose, the court said, well, we don't, the government said they're the same standard, it's all motivating factor. And the court said, no, we don't agree, we don't think there's repeal by implication, and therefore we say that M is different than A2. But what the court never did in Porter, and it never did in Fogg, and it never did in Ginger, is it never said, well, what's the standard under A2? And the standard under A2 never was solely because of.
But if you're practicing in the district court in this circuit, isn't the district judge entitled to understand that when you cite A, you mean what the circuit means by A?
Well, what the circuit meant by A in Porter was motivating factor. And what the circuit meant by A2 in Fogg was motivating factor, because those were the instructions that were given in that case. And in Porter, apropos to your question, Judge Silverman, you said, why does he have to elect? In Porter, the election was made at the time that the jury instruction was given. The plaintiff made the jury the request for a motivating factor instruction, and this court said nothing wrong with that. Approved that, but said if you get a motivating factor instruction, don't be complaining when the defense tries to make a same action defense. That's not our complaint. We're not complaining about a same action defense. What we're complaining about here is that the judge told this jury that they could only find for Mr. Ponce if they found that discrimination was the sole reason. And that is absolutely inconsistent with the law of the Supreme Court, the law of this circuit, and the law of every other circuit of which I am aware. I am not aware of any case anywhere in a Title VII context that supports a sole mode of jury instruction.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Submitted.